You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
The fantasy football stars of the future were on display in Indianapolis, Indiana, in the 2017 NFL Combine. We are past that stage of it. Right now, we are broadcasting live from Studio 34 in Midtown Manhattan in New York City, the world's capital, New York City. Got along with me, I'm the fantasy executive, Corey Parson. Brought along with me, my guy from Fantasy Football Champs, Bill Enright, and of course, from Football Game Plan, Emery Hunt. We are getting ready to put a bow on our 2017 NFL Combine coverage. Let you know what that means for fantasy football owners. Going to look at some of the winners and the losers. Also, I want to take a look back at some of the gentlemen who were drafted in 2016. See how they look going forward. I want to get into some discussions about the next great fantasy offenses. I want to look at the 2017 quarterback class, the much maligned 2017 quarterback class. And of course, I want to look at some of the defensive players up at the top of the board. Get these gentlemen's opinion on that. Fellas, here we go. We are Monday, getting past the NFL Combine. Emery, I'll start with you. What did you think of some of the things you saw this past weekend?
I actually like what I saw from the quarterbacks. Everyone went out there, competed, just threw the football well, threw it with confidence, trusted what they had on film, and just realized, like, hey, it's just a workout. I can't hurt myself here by throwing. So I just think by them going out there and competing, not worrying about what we see on this side of the coin in the media, like, oh, you got to compete with if he makes an incomplete throws an incomplete pass. I just like that these guys went out there and competed and just threw the football, which is what you expect them to do because it's just a workout.
Bill, when you look at what you saw over the past couple of days out in Indianapolis, what do you think? What do you get the feeling of the new crop of talent coming into the NFL?
It's certainly interesting with the combine every year. I think a lot of people sometimes put a little bit too much into these workouts that these guys are doing, these three cone drills and the broad jump and the vert leap, the vertical jump. And all of a sudden you're seeing these guys that maybe had a third round grade. Now they have a second round grade. Maybe they're creeping up to day one. And sometimes that's just a little bit puzzling to me because you see a lot of these analysts, these scouts kind of start to forget what they saw on tape. And then all of a sudden just take what they saw without pads on. And that starts to take a little bit more importance, and I'm not really a big fan of that.
And that's kind of where I want to start off, gentlemen. As we just saw what's happening over the course of the weekend and in the past week out there in Indianapolis, it is the NFL's annual event. These young men, they go out there to Indianapolis, Indiana, underwear Olympics, the whole bit. Is this the correct way, though, to evaluate talent? You know what? You're putting guys in hotel rooms, shuttling them in and out of meetings, in and out of medical exams. Then they go on the field, they put on their skimpies, and they go run, and then they come back, and you got a draft grade for them. This doesn't seem like this is the proper way, Emery, to analyze talent, especially players that some of these guys, you got 4 years of tape on.
Well, that's the most important part. You have to just trust what you saw on tape. Don't let these workouts dictate or change your whole thought process, because you should just come in and think, like, okay, if this guy runs a 4.3, let's say for instance the kid out of North Carolina A&T we talked about before,
yeah, Cohen,
he ran a 4.42. To me, that should confirm what you already saw on film. We saw him flying past everybody on tape. Now, if he came out and ran a 4.7, you'd be like, well, why is he so much faster?
Yeah,
that should be even more impressive. You know, you shouldn't downgrade a guy by what you see in a workout. Some guys may not test well, so to speak, and that goes from these practice drills or in real testing. Some guys just, you can't fake live action in sports, and some guys just really are better when it counts. And I think that's what some people get caught up in. Oh, he worked out this way, so we have to move him up when he doesn't play that way.
Bill, congratulations. You are the new executive, you're the new general manager of the New York Giants.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, here you go. You went from season ticket holder to executive. You know what I'm saying?
Like that.
You got a couple holes you need to fill.
Yep.
You got your scouts, your staff watching tape while you handle the big ball club. Now it's time to go to the NFL Combine. Yeah. What are you looking for?
I think the most important thing, you mentioned the Giants, and they have a middle pick in the 20s there, and you're probably saying to yourself, well, can I get the talent that I want, or
Can I get the talent I want maybe in the second round? Maybe I want to move back a little bit. Maybe someone that I saw at the combine is saying, well, you know what? He put up good numbers. It's validating what I saw on film. Can I get him in, on day two instead of day one? Can I get a better value for my day one pick and try to make some moves? That's what a lot of these combine meetings are about with agents and other general managers. It's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that fans don't always get to see. You see the 40-yard dash. You see the bench press. But how many meetings are going on and who's discussing what and the negotiations? I think that's what the combine brings to behind the scenes.
And that's what I kind of want to pull the curtain back on. You feel what I'm saying? Yep. What I want to look at is, okay, he ran a 4.3, but when I got him in the interview room and I got him in the meeting room, I like what I see, the 4.3, but I'm not really sure if this kid is the right fit for my clubhouse. I know I only got 15 minutes with him, but I'm starting to sense that all the talent is there, but this guy may not mix well with the crew I got in there right now.
Well, that's the problem you're going to have with a lot of these teams. Do I do what I have to do to win football games, which is take the best players, or do I have the luxury of being able to pick and choose personalities to fit my team? Because if you have a guy that is talented but maybe a jerk, you're like, you know what? I'm on a one-year contract. I may be out of here next year. I need to get guys that's going to help me win. So I will be willing to overlook the fact that he's a jerk and take him on my team. But if you're a guy, let's say like Bill Belichick, who has cachet, who has the luxury of being able to have a lot of time, he could have 17 losing seasons in a row and won't go anywhere. So he could sit there and say, you know what? I don't think his personality clicks with what we do here with the Patriots. So I'm going to pass on the talented guy and take the less talented guy because he has a better personality.
All right, Bill, you were fired.
Oh, damn. That was quick.
Fine, Bill. But don't worry. Now you're the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. You took over Hugh Jackson's job.
I don't want that job.
Now you're the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
You got Robert Griffin III.
Yep.
You got some decent pieces around him. You got Josh Gordon's carriage still laying out there. I don't know if you want to go back to that. You got Terrell Pryor, who you got to make some kind of decision with. You got all kind of issues on your defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. But you know what? You have drafted some D linemen over the course of the past couple years, pretty early in the draft. You have the number one pick. You are the man in the Cleveland Browns. What you going to do?
Everyone's saying that Myles Garrett is a coach. A coach-saving pick is, in other words, he's going to be so good that you can go have some really bad seasons, but you know what? It's the right pick to make. And I think the talent's there. I think the production was there when he was at Texas A&M. I don't like saying can't miss pick, but in terms of players coming out of this year's draft, I do think he's the number one pick this year.
Really? Because you see, if I'm your – if you're my head coach, yeah. I'm telling you – no, listen. See, this kid Watson, he wins championships. I understand we've missed on quarterbacks before. And if you miss on a quarterback, we're going to be back in this same position 4 years from now. I want that quarterback.
Is Deshaun Watson going to take the Browns from like a 4-win team or a 3-win team to an 8-8 team or a 9-7 team this year? This year. Yeah.
You need to see that kind of improvement out the quarterback position this year.
No, but I just think if you know, and the Cleveland Browns know that they are not in a position to compete, so why not build your team the best way possible with the best possible players, and maybe next year you get another quarterback, or maybe you get Tyrod Taylor in free agency and kind of build your team with bits and pieces, but still getting the best players when they're available to you. Yes, quarterback is the most important position in football, but if you're not going to win this year, why not get the best player?
Emery, you're the general manager at Cleveland Browns. I'm the owner, right? I'm the owner.
Right.
Bill's the coach. You're the GM. Emery, I was talking with Bill. He likes the kid Garrett a lot, you know what I mean? But I'm looking at Watson, and I'm looking at a guy, 28-2, you know what I'm saying? Good moxie, looks like a leader. I've seen him in the national championship. His teammates love him. Everybody around him love him. He came out here at the combine. He was impressive in the interview room. I want that guy.
And this is where the GM and head coach have to have that conversation, why you see a lot of disagreement and within the ranks, and it's just a philosophical difference. I understand where Bill is looking at it, like, hey, Garrett is a guy that is a pass rusher. You have to be able to get after the quarterback. But as a GM, I have to look at the roster and say, okay, we have Nate Orchard, we have Tyrone Holmes, we have Carl Nassib, we also have Joe Schobert as edge rushers. Where will Garrett come in and fit, especially if I have some personal concerns about Garrett's ability to get off blocks? I mean, when you look at his competition in the SEC, If you go back to 2015, Evan Engram, who's a flex tight end, 4.43 guy, not known as a blocker, ate his lunch one-on-one in pass pro. You also look at Laremy Tunsil, top 10.
Gas mask from the Dolphins last year.
Ate his lunch one-on-one. You look at Kansas State, the tackle, one-on-one blocks, ate his lunch. On the flip side, Jordan Willis was winning all day against those A&M tackles, something that's going to get drafted this year. So I would say maybe we can hold off on Garrett, but I can't trust RG3. I can't trust any other quarterback behind him. You would like to have thought that maybe Cody Kessler would have done enough to raise his stock, but he's another guy, health-wise, you can't trust. And I think Watson showed his ability to stay healthy for a full season. That was my biggest question coming in, partly because Clemson got rid of that stupid quarterback power running play that where these quarterbacks got injured. Watson, to me, would be the pick. Or if you want someone that's sturdy, you look at maybe Pat Mahomes or DeShone Kizer. To me, I would go quarterback because they handle the ball every play, and I think they can elevate the team. I think right now, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, take the left tackle, that's safe. How has Joe Thomas helped the Browns in the last decade?
Joe Thomas is going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Nobody else is.
But how has he helped the Browns win? You know, and I think good quarterback play can supersede the offensive line. If you can get rid of the football quickly, you don't know how. And I think Cleveland is better on the interior, which is most important, number one. And if you have a guy that is mobile that can get out the way if your offensive line is terrible, then there's your help right there. And I think that's why Dallas looks so good. Prescott, you didn't want to blitz because he could take off. And so just why Aaron Rodgers looks good. You can't even name anybody on the offensive line for Green Bay. You know, they just they make you believe they have the best offensive line. Right. But if you get rid of football quickly and you can run, it helps it out. So I think I will go quarterback. And then if I still feel as though there's somebody, let's say Jordan Willis is there in round two, okay, now I can add another edge rush guy. But I got the quarterback that I believe could be helped with, as Watson, Kizer, or Mahomes.
Here's the problem I have about taking the quarterback. Which one do you take?
Anyone.
Is Watson the – well, if you're going to take a guy number one, you have to be sure that he's the right one, because how many times do we say, oh, Aaron Rodgers, he's, you know, MVP, he's Super Bowl winner, and then, oh, the Niners took Alex Smith that year, number one overall. What a mess up that was. You don't want to be in that position, especially if you're the Browns. 26 starting quarterbacks since 1999, it's absurd. If they take the wrong one, it just sets their franchise back even more.
I think that ties it to a guy we're going to talk about. I mean, I thought a while back the guy they took in Colt McCoy was decent, you know, enough to where he could help a team win. But also, I do believe a guy like Johnny Manziel could have helped them win. Here's the thing. Before we found out his drug and alcohol issues.
But we knew that.
No, we didn't know it was that.
We knew he had a party issue.
But here's the thing, too. It's easy to get in trouble when you don't have stuff to keep you occupied. So if you're a player that's used to playing, and now you get to the NFL and you're required to sit the bench, and they say we're going to sit and you're going to learn. But if you feel as though you're better than the dude they have out there, you're still losing games, I want to play. So, and when I think if Johnny Manziel was allowed to play, I don't think he would have been as bad off the field as we saw him do. Because think about it, when he got out there and played, he played well. It's just that, you know, by him being, okay, I didn't like the way he walked this week, he's back on the bench, he's the backup. Right. And so I think those things kind of, it's all from top to bottom, how you interact with the players and coach, GM, GM owner. Everyone has to be on the same page. This is why teams, that the same doggone eight teams we see in the playoffs each and every year, because they have that continuity.
So what I'm basically trying to say, fellas, is the interview room is important than the position drills, in my opinion.
The medicals, too.
The medical, that obviously, you know what I'm saying? But I think I want to look at the game tape, and I want to know how many NFL-level players were you playing against week in and week out on a consistent basis playing big-time college football. That's it. I think that's the best way to judge this. And with that being said, I think the guy at the top of the board should be DeShone Watson, correct?
Hey, you could make that case. Absolutely, you could make a case for a number of players that's at the top at the position. But speaking in specifically for the Browns, if you're looking for a quarterback and you look at the guy that played the best when the lights were on, I mean, you look at all the big games. I know people bring up Kizer's record this year, but the one game I saw live last year was just so impressive. Was the Temple game where he stepped in and Temple, if these receivers didn't drop four touchdowns, Temple would have beaten Notre Dame in the top 10. But Watson, I mean, Kaiser kept coming back and back and led those guys on a game-winning drive at the end of the game. So I think, and he reminds me a lot of Alcorn State Steve McNair. And coming out of college. So I think personally, the top three quarterbacks all have the same type of cachet: Watson, Mahomes, and Kaiser. And after that group, I think you can find guys that you can win with, like Alex Smith, you know, like a Trubisky or someone like that. That he's not bad, he's not great, but you can win with, and then you stockpile pieces around him. I think a lot of people look for that quote unquote franchise guy, but you got to get good players. You know, there's no downside in stockpiling good players on the team, you know.
Yeah, Bill. Now, when you talk, Bill, the thing with Watson, people will bring up, the detractors will bring up the turnovers.
Right.
The turnovers have seemed to be a problem for Watson. Obviously, that's something that you cannot have in the pro game.
Of course, and you get that a lot with guys that are trying to make plays, right? They want to score. They want to get that first down. They want to move those chains, and sometimes they force themselves into positions that are unwinnable. But they're trying to win the game. It's a little bit like quicksand, right? You're trying to fight out of it, but at the same time, by fighting more, you're just sinking down into the ground a little bit more. I think that's what happened with Watson a little bit. Didn't happen in that national championship game, though, because they were down, and that playmaking ability, his confidence in himself to make those plays, make those throws, that helped them win the game. So when you look at a guy like Brett Favre, was like that. You know, you have that gunslinger mentality. Something good might happen every time he has the ball. Something bad might happen every time he has the ball. But if you want a guy that's going to try to win you games, you want him to be able to have that confidence to make those plays.
You know what? To piggyback on, that's a great point, because if you go back to 2013, one of the questions I had about Geno Smith was, you know, talented passer. Obviously, he could throw the football over the field, but it was almost like a guy had to be open before he threw it. Like, you know how some guys can anticipate and they didn't want to make the mistake. I felt as though right. At times he was protecting that interception, touchdown interception ratio at West Virginia. Like, man, this may be a tight throw. I don't want to make it. A guy like Favre or Mahomes, for instance, would throw the ball and deal with the consequences later. Yep. You know, you have to have that it factor, that I don't care if I make a mistake, I'm a go down swinging type of mentality.
All right, so here we go. We are off and running on the program today. Day four of our NFL Combine coverage coming right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. When we can return and continue, we'll talk about some of the players that shined over the weekend and some of the players that had interesting things happen to them that might draft their drop stock. Excuse me, that might drop their draft stock when we continue right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Football Stars of Tomorrow. Discussing them right now on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Day four of our NFL Combine coverage. Got my guys, Bill Enright, Fantasy Football Champs. Emory Hunt, Fantasy Football Game Plan. Rocking out with me right now. Inside Rockin' Raleigh's. Oh, I tell you what, fellas, it was pretty interesting in here. Yesterday they had like the brunch thing going down. Tough.
Brunch is big in the city, man. Like, you got to keep the party going from Saturday night.
Yeah, the ladies always come out for brunch. You know what I'm saying? So it definitely made very interesting over here in Studio 34. You know what I'm saying? I'll be honest with you. I actually, like, we finished doing the show around noon. I didn't leave here until 2:30.
I was about to say, did you have guests come in? If you saw it popping outside, why not invite some people to come and sit on the couch and experience a live show?
The thing about it was, you know, it wasn't going to go down like that. Like I said, serious business going on. But Friday night, doing Dame Martinez, the spitting statistician, he does a show, Shot Callers, Friday night, 7 o'clock on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. And I came in the studio and he had what he called the gaggle of co-eds in here, you know what I'm saying?
So, in the studio. That's doing radio right, man. Drop the ball.
That was very mean of you, Emory.
You notice Corey always sits facing the window.
Right. Always.
Right. He knows what's up.
So I got. So I'm in charge of the Cleveland Browns. We have to make this draft pick. I got my GM here. I got my coach here. Let me just throw this out right quick before I get in some of the winners and the losers. If you're one of these big prospect quarterbacks coming out this year, I'm just going to throw two names out at you. Who would you rather play for? Hugh Jackson or Kyle Shanahan?
Hugh Jackson. I think Hugh Jackson is a quarterback's coach, if that makes sense. I like how he worked with – think about his track record. He was a former quarterback.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
College of Pacific, or before Pacific dropped football.
Okay.
They used to get pounded by Nebraska every year. So, and so he was a college quarterback, so he played the position. He coached Terrell Pryor out in Oakland, made the trade to get Carson Palmer out there in Oakland, who wasn't that bad out there. Mm-hmm. He actually put together a decent season that in a crucial situation. Andy Dalton worked with. That's another guy we talked about you could win with. Mm-hmm. May not be the best, but he's definitely – proven that he is a solid starter.
He can get you to 9-7.
Exactly. And get you to the playoffs. You know? So yeah.
And then you can sit out there in -5 weather and watch him lose. Okay.
He also made A.J. McCarron competent.
Yep. A.J. McCarron's somebody that players that people are talking about in the offseason.
That's another type, Andy Dalton type. You know, yeah. He's not a bad quarterback. You don't win as many games at Alabama if McCarron is terrible.
But I think Shanahan has the same kind of track record, though.
But Shanahan didn't play the position. So okay. Shanahan was a receiver.
All right.
And we played against Shanahan when he was at Texas.
Really?
Yeah, so this was back in 2000. We were up 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. They took out Chris Sims, put in Major Applewhite. We punt the ball down there on the 1-yard line.
Yeah.
Applewhite comes in. The crowd is crazy because they love Applewhite. Yeah. First play, 50-yard pass to Roy Williams. Second play, 49-yard touchdown to, I think, Sloan Thomas. We lose 52-10.
Oh, so beat up pretty. I thought this like had an ending like where we came back.
That was quick. Like grand over the grand closing. But he worked with all these quarterbacks, man. And you saw what he did last year. Think about last year. You had Cleveland went through 5 quarterbacks. All of them played statistically very well.
We were using them in fantasy.
And so, I mean, Hugh Jackson can get you in the right situation. I think that's the guy you would want to play for.
Bill, you agree with Hugh?
You know, Kyle Shanahan has and Chris Sims have tattoos of each other's initials on their legs or something like that.
You're shitting. Are you kidding me?
I don't know if I can play for it. I get it. Like, you're my boy, but I'm going to tattoo your initials on my. I think
Tony Cincata and Mike Cardano have the same thing going on, but that's neither here nor there.
That's a true story.
Wow.
All right, so here we go.
Yeah, you can't play for him after
that. Nah, I'll go with you. What's that tattoo you got, coach? Trade me to the Browns.
So, Friday, we were talking about Alvin Kamara, and you know what? He came out, you know what, and he was impressive.
Yeah, he was. He was. But you expected him to test well. Now, jump high, run fast. On the field, you know, so to me that's most important. And what he did was no different than Elijah McGuire at University of Louisiana did, 4-5-3, I believe. But they played the same game, and it just seems like McGuire was much more productive.
Bill, they love the interview portion of the program, of him and all of that. You know what I'm saying? He looks like he's going to be one of the guys that's going to be start to rise up draft boards after the combine.
A little bit underutilized at Tennessee, and I think that's always a problem, right? Because you kind of question, well, the athleticism's there, the productivity's there. Why didn't he get the ball much? Is it because Tennessee's game plan? Is it, you know, their offensive scheme? So that is always tough when you're grading a player. You see a guy that shows what you want to see on the field, but he doesn't get the ball enough. So that raises some questions, and then sometimes stuff like the combine and the interview process, that helps things along.
The interview process. You're Alvin Kamara.
Yeah.
Notice you don't really have the big gaudy numbers as the rest of the field. Right. Why was that?
I think you have to take it's tough. You can't throw your coaches on the bus.
See, that's what
right?
I'm saying. Can you say it was the scheme? They didn't use me right. So how do you answer that question?
I think you take the high road and said, you know what? Anytime I was given the ball, anytime I was granted with the opportunity, I tried to make the most of it. Was it as much as I wanted? No. I'm a kind of player that I want the ball all the time, but whenever I was given the opportunity, I try to do my best with it.
Now, the inner Alvin Kamara been like, Jalen Hurd wasn't supposed to be getting carries over me because I'm a way better running back than Jalen Hurd, as evident by him transferring out of Tennessee.
Yeah.
I was more fit for this offense than he was. I should have been getting the ball. But politically correct me says exactly what Bill said.
Yeah.
Nah, but I think it's like, listen, they didn't give me the shot. That's not going to fly with an NFL general manager.
Nah, because they're going to say, would he be that, what they call it?
Malcontent in the locker room.
The sources that says, like,
oh,
I'm not
happy
with the role in the offense. Like, with Brandon Cooks. You know what I'm saying? So,
I guess you don't want that.
Nah.
Because on the next level, it's a lot, you're under a lot bigger microscope. And all it takes is one report, and all of a sudden, it's on every local newspaper. The sports guy's covering it. I mean, Tennessee's a big program, but when you're in the NFL and you make kind of whispers like that, then, you know, now you're starting to get shady looks in the locker room.
E, you're Christian McCaffrey. How you doing, young man? Good to meet you. Why didn't you play in the bowl game?
Because I was hurt all season long, and I wanted to make sure I don't further injure myself and wouldn't have this opportunity to sit here and answer questions about football as opposed to, you know, how are you coming along with the injury? I want to be able to be out here and work out in front of you guys instead of rehabbing an injury. So I'm fully healthy now. I'm ready to get out there and do every drill.
Now, you know, in the NFL, if you're hurt, young man, you still have to play. You know, this is not something that you can do every now and then. It's a difference in being hurt and being injured.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, too. In college, you know, I was on scholarship. Now I'm under contract. So I'm obligated to get out there and do what I can. I would do whatever I can to help this team win, preferably carrying the football 20 to 25 times a game.
Do you think you can handle that load 20 to 25 times a game?
Considering the fact that I came out of Stanford where there's 75 tackles and tight ends on the roster and no wide receivers, absolutely. We ran power. We ran ISO. We ran short toss. I proved I can run in between tackles consistently in the Pac-12.
Well, you're going to take pounding from NFL defensive players, and I want to make sure that if we're sitting up here at 4-11, that you're not going to tell me that you're taking the last 2 weeks off.
Well, you can't hit what you can't catch. And my 40 time suggests that I run the 40 in 4.45, but I also, in my short shuttle, is probably the fastest guy here. So unless they can catch me, they won't have an opportunity to hit me.
Yeah, how do you think that was, Bill?
I think it's tough whenever you put a college player in position and say, you're about to make $1 million, play in this game, this, you know, it doesn't affect our ranking, it's not for a national championship, it's just for our school to make more money. I'll side with the players on that one.
10 times out of 10, because you think about it as a player, you're sitting out there and you, fortunately, we never was good enough to be in a bowl game, but yeah, looking at, you know, friends of mine that have played in bowl games, and you just sit, you watch them, and it's like, man, we're sitting here, let's say at the Citrus Bowl, and you look around the stadium, you see 75,000 fans, you see 75,000 advertisements, you know the game is on ABC, you know this game is being streamed live on the internet as well, you know the coach gets a $600,000 bonus if he wins this bowl game, and spread out to the coaching staff. So you just get this T-shirt, maybe an iPad, a hat. And I'm not playing in the game.
It's almost like, okay, well, this guy's going to forego his senior season. He skips out on a whole year. Right. I mean, we don't blast those players. This guy's missed one game. Now, I know McCaffrey wasn't eligible to come out a year earlier, but Fournette was, right?
Right. No, he wasn't.
He wasn't?
Both of them were the same.
All right. But that happens.
Right, exactly.
When guys forego their junior season, their senior season.
Jabril
Peppers?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So...
But you see, by the same token, though, I also think the NFL general manager is going to say, okay, but if it was so forget the Sun Bowl.
Yeah.
It's the national championship.
I think they play.
They play. Absolutely.
I think they play.
You want to win.
You're not hurt no more. Because every game that we play on NFL level, listen, there's going to be some nights where we got to go to L.A. and face the Chargers. There's going to be 30 people out there. But we're not going to be on Monday Night versus the Cowboys every week.
But you're not going to also be in El Paso in front of a half-filled stadium in a freezing cold in January playing against a team that has a 6-6 record.
National championship game, college football playoff game, they're in.
They're playing.
Pads on.
One of the gentlemen that we talked about, I think when you were here on Friday, E, was Clemson running back Wayne Gallman. He didn't really live up to it. He didn't impress on the field.
Well, I think that just jives with what we saw on film. I think he's a decent running back, a comp guy. You know, I compared this game to Carlos Williams. You know, a guy that can, you know, just... an effort guy. Like I said before, you know, he's the guy that when you're watching film with a coach, you're like, man, you need to run more like Wayne Gallman. Yeah. You know, you see him making noises, giving the extra effort, but doesn't really like, you know, breaking. He's not great, but he's decent, you know, and he's a guy that's going to probably be a second or a third comp back that can come in for a series and then go right back out. I think that's his game.
Bill, what'd you think about the dude, our guy John Ross? He broke CJ's record. He broke Chris Johnson's record with that blazing 40-yard dash. Now it looks like he's going to jump in up into the top 15 pick in the NFL draft. You know he's from. You know he started playing in Snoop Dogg's youth league.
Oh, in Compton?
Yeah,
That's nice. So did DeAnthony Thomas.
I didn't know that DeAnthony Thomas too. Well,
from Oregon.
Look at that, Snoop Dogg paying it forward.
Productive.
Mm-hmm.
John Ross. Okay, so he didn't wear the Adidas cleats.
No, mistake? So he doesn't get the island.
Mistake or no?
I think the Nike people are probably going to take care of him, though.
Yeah, I would think so. You run the fastest 40 time. I think you're pretty much set for endorsements. Yeah. Speedy slot receiver.
What? Nike has to give him a state, though, instead of an island. They have to one-up Adidas.
Yeah, he might end up like Arkansas or something. Like South Dakota. Kind of reminds me of a little bit like Brandon Cooks, but maybe a smaller frame. You know, Washington had a good football program this year, and he did some damage to a lot of the secondaries. I don't always look at a 40 time and say, oh my God, he ran a 4.2, the fastest ever. Now he's my top three receiver.
Exactly.
But it validates what I thought about him beforehand.
I'm hearing DeSean Jackson. You said Brandon Cook going to be able to stretch the defense, pop the top. That's very critical, especially for a team like a Tennessee Titans that have that running game that they want to develop. They want to stretch those safeties down the field. Now, I don't think Ross is a one, though. You know what I'm saying? I think he's a complimentary wide receiver. That's the way I look at it. And the game against Alabama, nowhere to be found.
Well, I mean, you got to look at the scariness factor of the quarterback play. I mean, Browning really folded his tent up quickly. And, I mean, saw that pick six that he threw at the end of the half, I was like, yeah, they're done. You know, that was the scariest pick I've ever seen. But Ross, I think people probably look at his size and think he's a slot guy. I don't think he's a slot guy. He's an outside receiver, just like Brandon Cooks. And I think that's why Cooks is so frustrated in New Orleans. They're trying to make him be this short Cole Beasley guy, but that's not his game. He plays on the outside, and I think Ross is the same way. I don't think Ross is as savvy enough of a route runner to play inside. You got to be real smart and savvy, not football. You got to be football smart and savvy.
Like a technician.
Exactly, and you really got to be in on it constantly, and I think he's more suited to, you know, beach off the line and fly down the field, and I think that's his game. So I would say he's along the lines of what we expected to see. He ran fast, but I think his game is more for the outside as opposed to the inside.
All right, when we return, fellas, what I want to do is I want to rewind, and I want to go back to last year this time, and I want to talk about some of the guys that are going into their sophomore seasons in the NFL and how we think we compare to some of the gentlemen that are in this upcoming season's rookie class. We'll do that when we continue right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. One of the big disappointments of the 2016 NFL season happened right at the top of fantasy draft boards. The Beast. I went on Facebook Live and I called him a beast. I said, Todd Gurley is a beast. I said, this is what I said. I said, I don't care if he doesn't have nobody else around him. He's good enough to do it by himself.
I think everyone thought that.
Now they said, now Les Snead, the GM of the Rams, like sophomore slump. Now, some of the gentlemen I want to talk about going into their sophomore NFL year, their second NFL season, because you can't be a sophomore. Hey, Kayla. You can't be a sophomore in the NFL.
Corey knows the waitresses by name. You know
what
I'm saying?
What? What? I work here. I have to be friendly with the coworkers. That's how you be a good coworker.
That's how you get free lunch.
There you go. You be a good colleague. So I want to discuss some of the gentlemen that were rookies this past year and kind of look at how they measure up to some of the guys in this year's draft class and what they would, you know, how you look at these guys for the 2017 season. And I want to start with the Malcolm Mitchell wide receiver out there in New England, because one of the things with Mitchell is good player. I like the talent. He had some times where he flashed in the 2016 season, but the Patriots really don't do a good job of developing wide receivers.
Yeah, they really don't. It's almost like they're allergic to guys that are top in talent-wise at that position. And I think there's probably 75 Malcolm Mitchells in each and every draft. You know, guys that are just solid. You know, there's nothing wrong with being solid. You know, I think as a football player, there's very few guys that are great. The majority are average and solid, which isn't bad. You know, and obviously there's some terrible football players. I think that's few and far in between.
Ryan Tannehill.
Most of these guys are average. So I think for the Patriots, they feel as though we have to get premier players at the edge rusher position, in the secondary, up front to protect our quarterback, and everywhere else we can kind of get by with serviceable, you know, solid players.
When you look at Mitchell, decent season, like nothing spectacular, but I'm not going to be one of the guys that's going in on this guy. Oh, I got to get me some shares of Malcolm Mitchell in fantasy.
No, but if you put him on the 49ers, you don't even know his name. But the fact that he was on the Patriots and he was catching passes from Tom Brady makes him look a lot better than maybe his talent should suggest.
How do you think he stands up in to this year's draft class?
I think he will fit right into the sixth or seventh round.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, right where he went. I think, because again, he was hurt a lot at Georgia too. And I think that should be factored into a lot of these guys' draft grades, because yes, you want to overlook that and say at his best he's X, Y, and Z. But if he's never at his best, then he can't be X, Y, and Z. Sometimes you got to call it what it is.
Yep, that makes sense. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Corey Coleman was the top receiver to go off the board in last year's draft. Now, I think the talent is real here. Injuries and poor quarterback play kind of took away from him in his first season, E, but I think Corey Coleman is a player that is probably a little bit better, well, probably a lot better than what he showed in his rookie year.
Absolutely, and I think this is probably the only position where your success is tied to the success of the quarterback. And, you know, it's how different, like we talked off air, how different would the Detroit Lions have looked with Roy Williams, Mike Williams, and Charles Rogers had they had started, let's say, Jeff Garcia, you know, as opposed to Joey Harrington, or even Mike McMahon, you know, who was there as well, the kid from Rutgers. So I think, you know, if the Browns can get stability at the position, then his numbers will grow. There's some nuance about his game that he has to get better with, and that comes with time. As you become a veteran, you start to find new ways to get open. But I think the talent is there. He just needs consistency at the quarterback.
You think he's better than Pryor, pound for pound? Coleman?
No. I like what Pryor did this year.
Yeah.
Showed me a lot. And I don't want to say Corey Coleman's a one-trick pony, but he does have that kind of deep ball nature to his game. Pryor did it all for the Browns this year. I don't know if Coleman can do it all for them.
What do you think?
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's same.
I agree with that. Because think about it. Because Pryor had to work on all facets of his game because he was making a transition. And if you, let's say, for instance, somebody at Baylor now that's in this draft class, KD Cannon, you could say the same thing about him. You know, he's just a go-deep guy, Mike Wallace guy. And so for him to have to run shorter routes is probably going to be a challenge like we saw with Corey Coleman.
One of the biggest rookie disappointments of the 2016 NFL season. You know how, Bill, we do the fantasy thing?
Yep.
Where we have the stash and cash.
Yes.
Draft him. Sit him on the bench. Wait on him. When he comes in, boom. David Johnson 2 years ago. Perfect example.
Right.
My stash of cash this year was Devonta Booker. Listen, CJ Anderson, whatever.
Availability is,
There you go right there. So I knew it was going to come at some point for CJ Anderson. And I'm like, this kid Booker is going to be able to step right in there and get the job done. I said, week 9, week 10, I got a piece to push me all the way through. And Devonta Booker was trash.
Well, because he kept going to football. You know, number one, you got to hold on to the ball. Number one,
yeah, that's the first thing.
we were teased a little bit, right? Because the whispers started before Anderson got hurt.
Yeah,
we saw all of a sudden Devonta Booker coming in, eating into Anderson's workload. Anderson then got hurt, and you're like, your eyes get wide open. You're like, oh my god,
I got him on my bench.
I have the guy that's going to compete with Ezekiel Elliott for the best running back rookie this year. Turned out it was Jordan Howard that really should have been the pickup that week. But Devonta Booker, because you saw what he was doing with Anderson in the game.
Yeah.
And then once Anderson got hurt, you really had high expectations, and he just did not live up to them.
E, what is Booker?
Is he just a guy? I like Booker, man. I think Booker can be Arian Foster. He just has to hold on to the ball. He has that same upright running style. He can run the inside-outside zones like you want. Deceptively fast, can pull away from some people, but he had those nagging injury bug problems at Utah, and also kept putting the ball on the turf. And if he can't do that, then he's gonna relegate himself to number two.
I think it's a little bit of a problem because I have him on my dynasty team.
Yeah, dynasty.
I was really excited because I think he fit that Gary Kubiak running style perfectly, and now Kubiak's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's gonna be a problem.
So we'll see what happens.
You put him in this draft class.
I like him as a second-round guy, right where I had him last year. I think I had him as a second-round type talent. I think from a pure running style standpoint, he runs the ball well. He sees the field well. He's a great receiver out of the backfield, so that's going to get you on the field. And he had the effort in the blocking department.
But he looked timid at times this season.
That's the thought process. You're trying to figure out what's going on.
And, okay.
You know, that's the transition you see guys make from high school to college, from college to the pro. Especially, I heard this coming in here, what they were talking about quarterbacks and, going from the spread offense to where now you have to
under the center.
Memorize paragraph long plays. I'm thinking to myself, well, why do these plays have to be paragraph long?
Yeah.
You know, how about you adapt that from the college game? Just call the plays simply and go out there and execute. And when you're a running back, now you got to figure out, okay, what defensive front they're in. Who am I supposed to block? Okay, if this guy, am I listening for an audible? And it was crazy, man. It's just, it's a lot going on before you could even think about just running the ball.
I think a lot of rookie running backs have a problem with, if there's 3 yards to get, just take those 3 yards. Don't try to force anything other than what you're given. 3 yards is there, get the 3 yards, move on to the next play. Don't take 1 yard or a 1 yard loss trying to get 4 or 5 yards when it was never there to begin with.
I was getting ready to hit the break, but before we do hit the break, I think I asked you about him. Did I ask you about CJ ProSize?
Yeah.
Last week. Bill, CJ ProSize.
I'm feeling him.
You feeling him?
Yeah, I really am. I think the fact that he was a receiver and then converted and looked good running the ball, I like the Seahawks offense this year, and I think ProSize is going to be a big part of it.
What if they were to bring Adrian Peterson in there?
I've heard those rumors, and I don't know if they're valid. I mean, they still have Thomas Rawls. They have ProSize. They have Alex Collins. I don't know if they're willing to give Peterson a 2 or 3 year deal, big money. I don't think it's what the Seahawks need.
But E, you think Seahawks? You think ProSize needs somebody in that backfield to split time with him?
I think both of those guys will be what they need. You know, they just need both to stay healthy. I think. And they also have Alex Collins as well, too. Yep, come in and chip in.
A little bit of a banger.
Mm-hmm. All right, when we return, I want to get into some of the wide receivers from last year's class, some of the wide receivers that would be second-year players. I want to specifically talk about the two gentlemen that could not get on the field in 2016 and return right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back up and Adam, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Coverage, day 4 of our coverage of the 2017 NFL Combine going down right now. If I'm not mistaken, you got like the defensive backs and stuff out there doing their positional things today, right? This is important. Those are the important players, obviously, because they can keep Tom Brady from throwing touchdown passes against you. So that's maybe Atlanta. No, I just can't stop making fun of the Falcons. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad I don't know no Falcon. I know a couple Falcon fans. They've been pretty quiet recently.
Have you seen them lately?
No. I have not seen them in person.
No.
I think they
check their social media. See if they yeah. they're
not coming to that brunch on Sunday.
I want to start off with Josh Doctson because, you know, I love Jamison Crowder. You know what I'm saying? And going into 2016, Josh Doctson this, Josh Doctson that, Doctson this, Doctson that. And I was like, you go ahead and have Doctson, Bill. I'm going to stick to my guy, Jamison Crowder. We couldn't see Doctson get off the field, on the field last year. So it's kind of almost like he's going into a, like he's a redshirt rookie. You know, or he's a redshirt veteran. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting with the Redskins this year. I think they're going to lose Pierre Garçon. I think they're going to lose DeSean Jackson. They may or may not have Kirk Cousins back under center, but Crowder's going to be the guy, and I think Josh Doctson's going to have to step up too.
E, when you look at him, where was he fit in this draft class? What's his skill set? Obviously, the injuries were a major concern, but is he any good?
Absolutely, man. I think in this draft class, he still would have been a first-round talent because it's talent supersedes system. And with all the receivers we've seen at TCU, a couple of guys got drafted last year, you clearly saw the talent of Doctson, despite playing, just like you saw with Crabtree when he was at Texas Tech. He clearly was a more talented receiver than the system suggested. So Doctson is a great player. He can high point the football. He's explosive. Health is going to be the biggest concern. But I think that's why the Redskins were a little bit more, you know, reluctant to sign these other guys. Like, hey, yeah, we have two up-and-comers. We have a solid third receiver as well in Ryan Grant. We have a tight end in Jordan Reed. So, yes, we can let these guys go. That's the Bill Belichick way of doing things. You don't overspend for guys. If you're drafting well, which the Redskins have the last 3 to 4 seasons, in my opinion, they have a real talented roster top to bottom. Yeah, you can let some guys go because you can trust your scouts and your drafting strategy to bring in, you know, just as good or if not better players.
Is he a better player than Crowder?
Different player.
Different player. Yeah, okay. Exactly. That's a good point. Yeah, different player. You can't ask those two dudes. That's why with receiver rankings, I tend to rate them X,
yeah,
Z, slot, and inside F receivers. skinny tight ends, I like to call them.
Yeah.
Because you can't ask Crowder to do the same things Doxson, right. you know, to do. So you can't really call them better or worse, you know.
What can we ask Laquon Treadwell to do besides get on the field?
That's it. Get on the field. Because, first of all, the Vikings had the perfect setup. You had Thielen on the roster that you finally allowed to play. He was good at St. Cloud State. Mm. You have Patterson, who's dangerous with the ball in his hands. Just find a way to throw him a short pass and let him turn it into a punt return. Treadwell was your quintessential X receiver. Mm. You have Stephon Diggs, who can do a lot of damage as a flanker. What's your problem? You know, just put
Sam Bradford.
And all his line. You know, and also Adrian Peterson. Being out. But I think the Vikings have on paper, their receiving core to me looks good.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think North Turner had something out for Cordarrelle Patterson, because there was no reason for what we saw from him as a rookie. And then all of a sudden, he just stopped getting on the field. All right, he can't run the routes, or maybe he makes some mental mistakes. But when you have a playmaker like that, you get him the football. We saw that once North Turner resigned last year. Mm-hmm. I think Treadwell will be in a position this season to get a lot more action. Even when Diggs got hurt, Treadwell still didn't get on the field. Thielen, I guess, really impressed everyone in camp.
Thielen was good.
Everyone in minicamp. And I don't think he's going to go away.
No, he won't. And matter of fact, I tell you a quick story. I was at the 2014 North Dakota State Montana game.
Right? Where was this played at?
In Fargo, North Dakota.
You've been to North Dakota.
I have been to North
Dakota. Stop playing,
son. Thought they were great, man.
How'd you get there? They have airports in North Dakota?
I had to fly through Chicago.
South Dakota?
So, I get to, I'm on the connecting flight in Chicago to fly back to Jersey. And the guy sitting next to me saw the football notebook I have. And the guy was like, hey, man, so what do you do? So he's talking. I'm thinking, like, man, I'm just trying to focus on, I'm tired. He was like, you know, I went to St. Cloud State. There's a guy you need to look at, and his name is Adam Thielen. And he's with the Vikings right now. He's on a practice squad. He gave me his life story of Adam Thielen. Gave they love him down. In Minnesota. He's not going nowhere.
So what's the deal with Treadwell, though? Because I got to think Diggs is better than Treadwell.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a three-wide receiver set.
Yeah, that's true.
That's your base set now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're smart, if you got three guys, that makes your third, your nickel corner, their third receiver is better than your third corner. So,
I heard an interview with Mike Zimmer, and he didn't say anything bad about Treadwell. He just said he needs to make that transition. He didn't make it fast enough from playing in college to the NFL, and he should be able to make it a little bit better. He should be able to be a little bit more productive in practice, which will lead to more game time this year.
And that's what we hope for the young man. Trevor, we want to talk about another wide receiver going into his second season. That is Cincinnati's Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd was well sought after last year, a higher draft pick. I believe it was a second-round draft pick that Boyd was last season. Even when you look at Tyler Boyd, listen, he's no A.J. Green, but I think he's got to be better than Brandon LaFell.
Absolutely. Like, to me, Boyd was the most polished receiver of last year's class because he could play inside or outside. He ran routes perfectly. He can even do some creative things with him in the backfield and stuff like that. But he catches everything with his hands. Mm-hmm. And if he broke a lot of records at Pitt, and they have had a track record of success with wide receivers that have been talented. But he was probably the most talented and polished receiver coming out. I'm excited to see what he can do as a compliment to A.J. Green.
Last year I went to Pittsburgh.
That's right.
Antonio Bryant, I think it was.
He threw the jersey at Bill Parcells.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. He was talented. He broke a lot of records.
That's very brave to throw something at Bill Parcells.
Toughness.
Yeah.
Brandon LaFell's a free agent. I don't think he'll be back with the Bengals this year.
So you think that's Tyler Boyd's whole gig right there?
Yeah. Number two guy.
Movement slot him in.
Tyler Eifert still.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Two wide receiver set. Maybe a couple of running backs and a tight end.
They seem like they're not. They seem like they got a problem with Jeremy Hill. I think Jeremy Hill is good, though. I like Jeremy Hill.
I liked him a lot his rookie season when he was scoring double-digit touchdowns. I think last year when Giovanni Bernard went down.
He was decent last year when Gio went down. I mean,
let me pull up his game log.
You always think, okay, the people look at it like, okay, you got two running backs. Okay, this guy's hurt. The other guy's going to take over and run with it and be like Ezekiel Elliott. But I don't really think that's really the whole thing. And then I look at where they were in the season. They got Eifert back trying to fight to get, you know, respectability in that division, which was not won till later on, you know. So
Jeremy Hill, 2016, two games of over 100 yards, three games of over 75.
He caught some passes, too, though, when Gio went out.
His best receiving game was six catches for 61 against the Baltimore Ravens in Week 12.
Yeah.
other than that, listen, I mean, he
was able
to
stream
two.
Him. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying he was, you know.
See, my biggest problem with him, I never knew when he was going to get into the end zone. And that's always tough to predict. And when he got into the end zone, he rewarded you. When he didn't, he burned you.
We only got a minute to go, fellas. Quick, Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is a player that I really like, and I'm going to be right back in on again. I know DeMarco Murray is still going to be in the way, but I like Derrick Henry.
I like him too, man. I thought he was going to take a lot of one-yard touchdowns away from DeMarco Murray, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But
DeMarco Murray like his money.
Exactly.
Yeah. DeMarco Murray's like, listen, I don't know what y'all doing with this kid here, but I'm going to be the guy running the football, scoring the touchdowns until I can't do it no more. So there you go right there. We got an hour, Dan. When we come back, when we return, I want to talk about some of the up-and-coming offenses that could be the next great fantasy offense. Plus, we'll talk about the 2017 quarterback class and look at some of the best defenders on the board this year.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Hour number two of our coverage, day four of our coverage of the 2017 NFL Combine. Got my guy Emory Hunt, football game plan. Bill Enright, fantasy football champs, rocking with you. Lovely, brisk Monday here in New York City. My phone this morning, fella, said 19. That is not what you kind of want to get up to at 4:30 in the morning. That's tough.
Yeah, it changed my whole wardrobe because I was just gonna come and I was like, "Oh no, this is coat weather, gloves weather."
You bought the big joint out.
Yeah,
You got the big, you know what I'm saying? The Wall Street joint,
right? Exactly.
Bill, what's going on, my man? How was everything? How was your commute and day into the city?
Emory is always dressed like a fashion GQ model. Like, I met him at the NFL draft a couple years ago. I think I was in jeans and like flip flops.
Yeah,
he was in a full suit. I mean, he's just like
Well, that's my general manager.
Very professional.
Well, you never know who you're going to run into, especially that's coming here now. Like, best believe I'm going to be on my best dress on the behavior. Like, what are you talking about? You know,
my wardrobe selection was I had a thermal on before my wife looked at me. That's what you're wearing? That's for radio. So I put on a sweater. I mean, I didn't know what to
it's
do.
It's a nice sweater, but I like
it. It is nice. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's a nice color right there. So everybody is
it's brown.
Rocking and rolling today. You know what I'm saying? We got the defensive backs on the field, got that up on the screen, obviously talking about some things going into the 2017 season. Did a lot of stuff over the weekend looking at the combine, the players. Shout out to my guys Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello. Great job by them. Check that out right now on demand. Head on over Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Of course, you could download the app whether you have an Android device or an iOS device. Good times to be had. We are your best friends throughout the fantasy season. Matter of fact, I got my app up right now. Let me close that before I'll be listening to myself, and then that'd be real weird. Last hour, we talked about some of the sophomores coming into this year, some of the guys that were rookies last year. Looked at the process, how people evaluate talent. Are we really doing that the right way? I want to get a little bit deeper into these quarterbacks a little bit later on, but I want to start out with some current teams that I think are ready to make the jump and become very viable teams as far as fantasy football goes. And I want to start with the Tennessee Titans because I think the Tennessee Titans offense is getting ready to be an offense that can be an offense that has a lot of good fantasy relevant pieces, much like a Pittsburgh Steelers offense or much like something that you see with, you know, some of the other high scoring teams, the Green Bay Packers and stuff like that. And I look at Tennessee. I love the running game with the two backs. I wish, obviously, as a fantasy guy, Bill, you know we want them to take one and go with it.
Yep.
But that's not what it is in the NFL. But Murray and the young man Henry, Rashad Matthews was excellent. I didn't hear about this kid until I was drafting him last year. Where the hell did he come from?
The Miami Dolphins, and I think
I know that. I remember that.
But I think I think you may see another guy just fly up this year that they're really high on. It's Trey McBride.
Okay.
Who came out of William & Mary last year. Really good receiver. The coaches and scouts love him.
Yeah.
And so he's going to get his opportunity to get out there and compete. What I like about Tennessee, let's say from a fantasy perspective, they have the quarterback that's a dual threat guy.
Yeah.
So if he can't get you points passing, he's going to get you points with his legs.
Being able to run the football. Now, the next step to take this offense over the top is that number one wide receiver. I like Matthews. I don't think Matthews is a one, though. Not your prototypical one. We got guys like Alshon in free agency. You got guys like DeSean Jackson in free agency. Some of these bigger wide receivers. I don't think a guy like Brandon Marshall is a good fit. Do you think the way they make this offense take the next level, Bill, drafting one of these guys or maybe going for like an Alshon, somebody like that in free agency?
For fantasy purposes, I would love if Alshon went there.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be maybe not. Scheme aside, I think he would be very productive on a Titans team with Mariota at quarterback, a really good running game. I don't want to see Alshon Jeffrey back with the Bears. No. I think you're right. Yeah, the Titans could make that next jump this year. Alshon would be a good landing spot for the Titans because they do need that number one wide receiver. They don't have it. If they draft someone, it's very rare where you get a number one wide receiver as a rookie right out of the gate. It takes a little bit more time to develop. They could still be productive, but it's rare to see a guy jump in as the number one clear cut.
What do you think, E? Is their answer to put them over the top to make them this great fantasy offense, is it in free agency or is it in Mike Williams in the draft?
I would say it's in free agency. I like what Bill said about Alshon Jeffrey going in. I think you put him on that team, it will probably resemble that, 2013 year he had with the Bears, I believe, where he really
be a target monster, yeah.
Exactly, because they have the running game. The Bears have Forte running the football very well. Now you have a guy that you can get the football to on a vertical stretch or what have you. You also have Delanie Walker working underneath. You also have whoever you're going to put on the opposite side, whether that's Kendall Wright. You can cycle through those other guys on the other side. But I think Jeffrey will give him that number one guy that he can go to in the clutch and eventually go to in the red zone, and could make that offense not dynamic but very tough to stop.
If they can't find it in free agency, what do you think is a right fit in the draft?
Corey Davis out of Western Michigan, because you don't want this offense to really thrive on the deep ball, so you need guys that can quote-unquote create their own shot. So a Corey Davis is a Brandon Marshall clone, in my opinion. You could throw a little short pass to him, and he'll weave his way through a defense. He's a bigger body guy with great agility, and also maybe you underrated signing. Maybe you get Cordero Patterson to come in as well.
That's interesting right there. Patterson. I still think Patterson's game is so raw, but I don't think he's been really given the proper opportunity. Bill, when you look at the running game, who would you draft? Murray or Henry?
I mean, listen, if I'm in the second or third round, I'm taking DeMarco Murray. If I'm in the eighth or ninth round, I'll take Derrick Henry. I do think Murray will be the lead guy for the Titans 10 out of 16 games this year.
Yeah.
12 out of 16 games this year. Henry will have 60 yards and a touchdown. 50 yards and a touchdown here and there. But until Murray gets hurt, Henry's value is certainly capped.
You don't think it's enough there for both of them?
No.
Yeah, it's a lot to eat off of.
Only because, you know what? Murray does everything well.
Yeah, he does.
He was great receiver out of the backfield this year. Very productive catching the ball and running the ball. So if Murray was a first or second down kind of guy, and Henry was a third down passing down specialist, unfortunately, that's not the case. They both almost have a similar
skill set.
Yeah. And I think Henry's very underrated catching the football. They didn't do a lot of that with him this year, but from what I did see, he was productive.
Now, he could play. I think Henry could play. I just, he's in a situation where he's behind a veteran back who's getting big money, so he's really, hate to say it, knock on wood, he's going to really need an injury in order for him to see it. Right. They were at the podium, they were asked about it, and they said that they thought they had enough to feed both running backs. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out throughout the course of the off season. Ian, I think the next on this list I have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I circled this one because Mike Evans was phenomenal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he could have been so much better. He didn't convert on a lot of his targets last year. But Mike Evans has really stepped up, become the BFF to Jameis Winston. I love Jameis Winston. Pro-style quarterback down there at State. Transitions into the NFL with no problem. He does turn the football over a lot. But the thing I do like about him is he can also come back and win games for you. He had some big-time wins last year. This was a team that knocked on the door to the playoffs. But the running game and that second wide receiver, I think, is stopping them from taking it to the next level. Dirk Cutter as the head coach, a great offensive mind. Is it DeSean Jackson in free agency, or is it a wide receiver or running back. What's more of important to this team? Getting Doug Martin out of there and saying, you know what, let's scrap this and get started all over again? Or do you say, you know what, we'll bring you back, Martin. Give us a guy like Deshaun to spread it out, and then let's see what you got.
I think you have to bring in Deshaun Jackson because he will be the great complement to what they have on the roster. You also got to factor in Cameron Brake, the tight end.
Oh, yeah, yep. Cameron, you know, make America so great.
And I think in the draft, you have to come away with one of the big three: McCaffrey, Cook, or Fournette.
You think running back is a must?
I think that's the must, and you get Jackson via free agency because he's a veteran guy. Jameis has that cachet to where he can appeal to veteran wide receivers. But I think you want to get younger and cheaper in the backfield. Spend a little bit of money on the flanks because you're going to try to probably throw the ball maybe 60% of the time anyway.
Yeah.
Go cheap on a running back. Spend a little bit more money on a guy like Deshaun Jackson, and now you have your offense set.
I think it sounds good to me.
That would be dangerous for fantasy because they play in the NFC South.
Yes, exactly.
Defense is optional. Mm-hmm. Right. And all of a sudden, you got Deshaun Jackson, and then you draft a running back in the first round, and fantasy football managers will be drooling over the Tampa Bay Bucs this year.
And that's the thing. I think the Bucs are right there, though, because I like Jameis. We like Jameis. We like what he could do. Okay, you may not like him for fantasy. I think Jameis very well may be a better NFL quarterback than he is as a fantasy quarterback. We know what Mike Evans is. Mike Evans has to start catching more of these passes, though, because his target share as to what his receptions were, still, he could have had a much better season. But I think Jackson, I agree, Jackson is the perfect wide receiver to bring in there, and Jackson has already said I don't think he goes back to Washington. I think he's done with that situation. I think the Philadelphia return to Philadelphia was intriguing to him, but he said he wanted to play with a great quarterback. And I think he's looking at Tampa and getting down there with Mike Evans and Jameis Winston. And if they put a back in there, I think they're in good shape. Which back you think is a better fit for what Cutter tries to do? Obviously, we saw him with the burn of Michael Turner in Atlanta.
I think either Cook or McCaffrey. I think because they're going to try to spread the field with that three wide receiver set, so why not get a back that's better with inside zones, outside zones, get one of those backs. I think Fournette is good. To me, he's like Herschel Walker. You know, he's explosive, he's talented, but he's more limited to, let's say, a power running game. He would fit perfectly in Tennessee if they didn't draft Derrick Henry last year. Yeah. So I think if you're Tampa Bay, you want one of those zone backs. And to me, get one with home run hitting ability. That's Cook or McCaffrey.
And I got Washington on this list, right? But I'm like, you really don't know what the situation in D.C. is going to be, who the quarterback is going to be. Could be Colt McCoy, who I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of Colt McCoy. I think Colt McCoy can play. I think he deserves an opportunity to show it. Nobody else seems to agree with me on this. But I'm going to be the last man standing with Colt McCoy. I may be the last guy at the party, and I also may be the guy that looks like the genius when it all is said and done. But when I look at Washington, no matter what they do on the outside, no matter what they do at quarterback, say they bring Cousins back, right? And say, you know, you're satisfied with Doxson and Crowder and Jordan Reed as your guys on the outside. And they may add a piece here or there. Maybe they pick up a Kenny Britt to replace one of the guys that they lose in the offseason. They still got to do something at running back, though, right?
That's where Fournette goes. You know, now you bring in a George Rogers type back, you know, for those guys out there that remember what George Rogers looked like in that Redskins uniform on that ugly 38, you know, so I think that's where you bring George Rogers. That's where you bring Fournette. They need a running back, too. So, again, those teams with the big three could work because right now they have a bunch of the same type of backs.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell the difference between
Fat Rob Matt Jones.
All the crash test dummy backs go to Washington, right? Yeah. And so get you a guy that at least he...
Gallman.
Exactly. Right. A hustle hard type back.
Yeah.
But I think Fournette would be perfect for... Now, here's the thing.
He's not going to last that long, though, right?
He will last long because I think he has home run hitting ability. And I think he is going to get – you saw him get progressively
better.
On
draft day, do you think he can drop – I'm not sure.
Where's Washington? Washington's probably in the 20s, right?
Yeah, I don't think he lasts that long to Washington.
If teams are stupid, which we've seen teams do –
this is true.
– in the NFL, great players will drop. So, but the thing is, there's no downside to taking Cook or McCaffrey if you're Washington. I think if you want to address quarterback, if they could go with Colt McCoy, that's fine. But I think they're probably in the market in the second round for a quarterback as opposed to someone in the first. It depends on how the draft falls. let's say if one of these quarterbacks that they, let's say if Mahomes, I mean, or Trubisky or Watson or Kaiser goes early and Mahomes is kind of hanging around and they've already picked, I wouldn't be surprised to see Washington go back in the first and grab Mahomes. You know, I think they're going to be in play very early for a quarterback.
I think it all's going to depend on what happens with Kirk Cousins, because right. then obviously this quarterback discussion is irrelevant mm-hmm. if they get a long-term deal with him. But if sure. they don't, then absolutely I can see them then drafting a quarterback because they'll need someone long-term.
Washington has a 17th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a couple teams ahead of them that need running backs too.
Right.
Yep.
One of Colts, Panthers.
But you look at some of the running backs projected to go later in the first round. A guy like Alvin Kamara mm-hmm. is a later first round draft pick. I even see one mock draft that has Dalvin Cook going in the 20s, which I don't think he lasts that long. So they could have some action at running back, but you know, Washington, they do need some other pieces, sort of like, you know, the quarterback, what you said. They could also use some help on the defensive side of the football also. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. Let me ask you fellas this. What is Jabril Peppers' position?
Defense. You know, he's a safety, man.
So when you say defense, it's like just put him on defense.
Put him on defense. Okay. You know, just like how we were talking about this off air, just how they utilize, the Cardinals utilize Tony Jefferson or Tyrann Mathieu, is you want to find the best matchup. Let's say when you're playing Pittsburgh, it may be one of those receivers outside of Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. Match him up on that. Maybe Le'Veon Bell. If you're playing New Orleans, it may be Brandon Coleman, the big inside receiver for the Saints. If you're playing Carolina, it may be out on Devin Funchess, and therefore you can use another guy in there to get pressure. So I would say he's a great athlete, great nose for the football. He understands defense and understands secondary play, and I think that's the type of guy you want playing for your defense, because he's going to keep you in good situations.
You agree with that, Bill? Say the same thing.
Yeah. Did you watch him play in high school at all?
No, I didn't.
You're from Jersey, though, right?
I live in Jersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I saw him play in the state championship game against Bergen Catholic, who is a powerhouse.
Oh, Bergen Catholic is very good.
That's like right down the street from where I live.
Right. They're a powerhouse, not just in New Jersey, nationwide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jabril Peppers dominated them, single-handedly won them the state championship. He went to Paramus Catholic, and he was excellent at running back. Excellent. And then when I was watching him on defense, I was like, I don't even know if he's going to play running back in college. And then he didn't.
Yeah.
And he was spectacular. Every time he makes a play, you're like, I don't know if anyone else on the field could have made that play. Fills the hole. Like Emery said, he can cover anyone, running back, tight end, receiver. I do think he'll do some damage on special teams. This kid is a special talent. And for him to be top five, top 10 pick, definitely worthy.
All right, when we return, when we come back, we want to dig a little bit into the 2017 quarterback class, maybe even go down and board a little bit, talk about some of the other top prospects coming out in this class right here when we continue Fantasy Sports Radio Network, day four of our coverage of the NFL Combine. They do this to me on purpose because they want to hear me bring it back as, like, you know what I'm saying? You listen to the Quiet Storm right here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Talking about the 2017 NFL. Oh, cut it out. here we go, fellas. We back talk about these quarterbacks, the franchise changes, the face of the franchise. They could take you from, you know, dormant to success overnight. We know that Dak Prescott left a big piece out there for these young men to handle this upcoming season. E, is there a third, fourth round gem, a Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott in this bunch? Or is that, you know what, they're out there, but you got to make the system work for them?
Listen, NFL teams, gather around, hear me out, because I'm about to give you a true gem at the position. I'm going to give you three, because this quarterback class, in my opinion, is ridiculously good.
Everybody else is saying this is one of the weaker quarterback class.
Stop believing everybody.
All right.
Listen to me. And so when you look at this quarterback group, and you can find two in the state of Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, matter of fact, both of them, play right down the street from each other. Temple's quarterback, P.J. Walker, is phenomenal. You watch his tape, you see a guy that's doing everything that you want the quarterback to do. And you also want to talk about big game experience. Like I said, they dropped four touchdown passes in that Notre Dame game. They should have won, beat that game. They should have won that game. They beat Penn State that year. They should have beaten Penn State again this year. He left Temple as the all-time leader in passing yards, touchdowns, everything. He broke all of the guy that just won the CFL trophy this year, Henry Burris, out there in Ottawa. P.J. Walker is a legit quarterback. He's 5'11", 200 pounds, but people will knock him because of his size. But his production is far greater than people have given him credit for at Temple. You also look at, down the street, Alec Torgerson of Penn, who played in the East-West Shrine Game. And I was at the Penn-Yale game looking at Penn-Villanova, I'm sorry, looking at their Tana Passanio. And the quarterback, I was like, man, this guy is shrinking the field. It looked like his passes were arena football passes because of how fast they were getting from sideline to sideline. He has a tremendous arm, goes down to Tampa at the East-West Shrine Game, and was the best quarterback there. Actually was able to start the game for the East team. So those are two. One more that's being vastly underrated, coming from Old Dominion. And to me, he plays a lot like Teddy Bridgewater. And that's David Washington. You know, he was a receiver at first. For 2 years, he was a receiver. He's flirted between receiver and quarterback. He was actually an average to terrible receiver. But they had Taylor Heinicke at quarterback, who was prolific. So they asked him to play receiver. Last year, play receiver and some quarterback toward the end of the season. This year, put together a tremendous season, 28 touchdowns, 4 intercepts, got them to the Bahamas Bowl to where they beat Eastern Michigan. And he threw his accuracy on the deep ball, especially on outbreaking routes, is outstanding. He's 6'3", 215, and he's a tremendous quarterback. So those are some deep sleepers.
What the NFL is going to say is these are undrafted free agent type guys that didn't play against no big competition.
But they're going to go ahead on and sign Mike Glennon for $15 million and wonder why they have back. They're going to be out here trying to find Brian Hoyer to start. These are the guys that have to get these opportunities, because I don't believe there's ever a shortage of talent across the country. You just got to go where the talent is. And sometimes it may be at Penn. It may be at Old Dominion. It may be at Temple. You know, you can't keep looking in the same spot for the same type of players. I just think that those three guys, to me, were super impressive on film.
Bill, you got $15 million for Mike Glennon, or you want to talk about some other options at the quarterback position?
You know, it's funny. What's the difference in signing a guy like Mike Glennon for $15 million or going out and trying to draft a quarterback in the fifth or sixth round, develop him for a couple years, and make him the starter? The difference to me is you're afraid of your owner. You're saying, well, I'm going to put out an NFL quarterback. He's been in the league for 4 years, instead of trying to develop somebody. And you can say, well, this guy was very talented, but they ended up drafting Jameis Winston, and he can be someone that takes us to the next level. I think it's a little bit of fear, or maybe a lack of confidence in your own coaching abilities to get the best out of your quarterback when he's undrafted, or he played at Temple, or he played at Old Dominion. And it's easier to sign a Mike Glennon for $12 million, $15 million, whatever it is, because he's been in the NFL for 4 years already.
Yeah, but I think that's the tough part, because you see it a lot every year. They'll say, well, this guy, Josh McCown, can be a bridge quarterback. He can help us along, or Matt Schaub. Even though you've seen...
No, not Matt Schaub.
No, sorry. But you've heard it. We've heard it just recently with San Francisco.
With San Francisco.
Yeah, like...
Because we was with Shanahan in Atlanta.
Exactly.
But that doesn't... I don't understand that thought process, because they're only proven that they can play not well, not bad, just play.
Yeah,
like, that's it. Why is Brian Hoyer still getting contract offers? Why is Josh McCown another perfect example? I just think it's out of fear and maybe a little bit of too much comfort.
I got a question for you, Bill. What would you give up if you're, let's say you're a team that needs a quarterback?
Yeah.
What would you give up right now for Garoppolo? Brett Huntley?
Oh, Brett Huntley. See, that's another good example. Because you know what? Aaron Rodgers isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
At all.
So why not give up a second rounder for Huntley? Maybe you can try to get a little bit of a better deal. But Garoppolo is another guy like that. You've seen Garoppolo do it. You haven't really seen anything from Josh McCown. He had one good year under Mark Trestman. I think it was a little bit of a fluke. So
it's Mark Trestman, so the numbers are going to be there.
A little bit inflated, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm with you. Why not try to explore your options if you're trying to win? Like the Texans, to me, they made the right move last year, but they got the wrong guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? They were a playoff team. Mm-hmm. They had Brandon Whedon, TJ Yates, a whole bevy of guys, and they went out and tried to make their team better this year by signing a free agent quarterback that looked good, and Osweiler didn't
fool them.
Right, he fooled them. Mm-hmm. But you can't blame the Texans for that. They tried to do the right thing. I don't know if a lot of teams out there are trying to do the right thing like the Texans
because
did.
Because you see what happened with Osweiler last year, and now you get Glennon going for $15 million. You know Garoppolo's going to want some good money also. But why don't these dudes just look back and be like, this just happened. We just got beat by Brock Osweiler last year.
And I actually think I like Mike Glennon. You know, I think he's serviceable. I think he's better than Hoyer, obviously, but not at $15 million. Because you also got to remember, this is the same guy that was starting, and he led them to the first overall pick. Yeah, and Winston comes in there and leads them to what, 6-10 or 7-9 his first year or something like that?
And then he came back and had him on the brink of the playoffs this year.
So you could see where Glennon's value is. But I'm with Bill. Why not – if it's all about money and maximizing profits as a business, why not try to find the cheapest option? Think about how cheap Tom Brady was until they had to pay him. And then he's also worked out contracts to where he can add more talent around him. But that's why you draft a guy like Dak Prescott and you're like, oh my God, he's good. He can play. He's going to be on his contract for, you know, a few more years. Just like Russell Wilson was on that contract for a few more years. And if you're confident in your drafting, you could find a guy, let's say from Temple, or there's another kid from Southern Illinois, and Josh Strahan that's outstanding as well. You get him as an undrafted free agent, you put him in your system, and you allow yourself to the luxury of saying, you know what, we got a guy right here that can get out there and play. Because we've seen the Green Bay toss out the kid from a Division III program, and he played well. So,
and you see, and that's kind of, Bill, what I'm looking at it like. I understand with fantasy, you know, we're whatever, it's fantasy football. Yeah. We wait on quarterbacks.
Yep.
Why doesn't it, like the NFL, I understand in the NFL you need a face of the franchise. It's totally different. But you can get quarterbacks later. They don't have to all come in the first round.
No, of course not. Fantasy quarterback and an NFL quarterback.
It's different, yeah.
Totally different.
Yeah. You got to pay this dude.
I think it's a supply and demand thing for a guy like Mike Glennon. The supply of quarterbacks in the NFL is limited. The demand for them is very high. A guy like Mike Glennon, does he deserve $15 million when he's unproven and when he was on the field didn't have much success? You know, it's a really interesting kind of dynamic with quarterbacks in the NFL. If he was a wide receiver, he wouldn't be getting $16 million. He'd be getting maybe like $7 to $8 million. Mm-hmm. Someone like Kenny Stills wants $12 million this year. Dude, that's not happening. You're not getting – Dez Bryant gets $14 million a year.
Yeah, you're not
Kenny gonna get, Stills is not going to get $12 million.
If I'm Dez Bryant, I sit out.
But the the supply of wide receivers is much greater than the demand. With quarterbacks, it's the opposite. Yep. So simple economics when it comes to quarterback contracts.
All right, so here we go. Let's get into – you know what? Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to continue this quarterback conversation. And I'm going to get into some more role-playing, some more analysis, right? We're going to do owner, coach, GM again. And this time we're going to come to a team in the NFC. And we're going to get some – and want to get you guys' thoughts on something that I heard the other day that could be very interesting when we continue right here on our coverage of the NFL Combine right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Owner, general manager, head coach. Got about a half hour left to go in the program. 1 p.m. Eastern time. We take you up to the BFFs, the best friends forever. That's Sussman, Stanful, and Florio. They're coming up next right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. But now, got my guy Bill Enright, Emery Hunt, got a little owner, GM, and head coach. I'm the owner because, you know, that's just the way it is. Emery, today, Emery, in this scenario, you're going to be the head coach. Bill, you're the general manager.
All right.
Bill, how about this, Bill? Not only are you the general manager, you're the general manager of your New York Giants. Congratulations. I like that. You are Brian, you're Reese. What's his name?
Jerry Reese.
You're Jerry Reese. That means you're Ben McAdoo. I'm the Marrow, Tish, the Giant family. Mm-hmm. So I'm coming in to speak to Mr. Reese.
Yeah.
I have my head coach here with me. I just got off the phone with the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? And they said they'll give us the number four overall pick and Blake Bortles for Eli Manning.
And I'm a general manager. I got to okay that deal?
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it. I'll take number four overall pick. You can keep Bortles.
I was about to say, you give me some Doritos and we straight.
Don't do that to Blake the Snake. Come on. He's a throw-in. He's a player to be named later.
I think if you're in the Giants' position and you know, for some reason they're being very public, and I don't agree with it, and you don't see a lot of teams do this, but they're being very public about Eli Manning only has 2 or 3 years left, and they're being very public about all of the offensive shortfalls have been Eli Manning's fault last season. Now, if you're the quarterback, you're the highest paid player on the team, you're supposed to take that burden. That's fine. But you don't need your coach throwing you under the bus consistently. He did it just the other day at the Combine. I don't know why Ben McAdoo is doing those kind of things. If I'm the GM, if I'm Jerry Reese, I'm sitting down like, you know what? We still have Eli.
You are the GM.
Yeah, that's right. Me, Jerry Reese, and talking to my head coach and saying, let's take it easy about giving too much information to the public, too much information to the media, because now you're almost tipping my hand. Maybe I'm looking at a quarterback in the first round, and now all the teams around us, maybe they're trying to make some moves to prevent that from happening.
Hey, Coach, I got on good word that we get this fourth pick. Watson's not going to be there. Watson's gone. But Trubisky's going to be there. What do you think, Coach?
I can keep Bortles if I'm going with Trubisky. But if I'm getting that fourth pick, and if Watson is gone, I'm taking Kizer.
Okay,
Kizer to me is a more along the lines of what you saw with Eli Manning. So we're gonna like seamlessly make that transition of a bigger pro style quote unquote quarterback that's gonna come in. And are we keeping Eli Manning or are we letting him go in exchange for that fourth overall pick?
Giving him away. He's not with us no more.
Okay, then.
He's gone. Our two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback is going to be in Jacksonville with his grandfather, Tom Coughlin.
That's smart money because you have to move on from some guys. You'd rather move on a little bit too early than too late. So I like the move by the GM. I'll take Kizer. And with that additional first-round pick, we're going to help out the offense once again by going running back. Maybe if Christian McCaffrey is there, I would like him. If not, then let's look at who is the best pass rusher that we can get as well, or the best cornerback that we can get as well. Because we're also getting up there in age with Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. I know we drafted Eli Apple, but I want either the tailback with the second pick or the cornerback with the second pick.
But listen here, guys, what about this? So we give them Eli, they give us their fourth pick. How about we go Fournette, Cook, one of those guys at four? Do you see a quarterback that we can get a little bit later on in the draft? Or maybe, maybe we go to Brian Hoyer route.
Well, why will we take that chance if we have the opportunity to take a guy that
we want,
you know? Why gamble with the draft?
The only thing, and we're talking about the Giants, and the only thing that wouldn't make sense about this deal is if they think they're in win-now mode, which they should. They're an 11-win team. They're a playoff team. They have an excellent defense. And their defensive guys that they signed are not rookies. They're in the second half.
Yeah.
They're in that second contract that got them big money. So if you are in win-now mode like the Giants or like the Cowboys, like the Packers, you probably don't want to
get fool with it.
Right. You probably don't want to get rid of your franchise quarterback just to start fresh at that position.
Right. And also you look at the fact that the Giants have a bunch of those defenders coming back healthy. I mean, imagine what this defense would have looked like with
JPP playing the whole time.
And Thompson as well, safety. You know, so defense is going to be good again next year,
Yeah.
When you look at these quarterbacks in this, and thank you, gentlemen.
Yep.
When you look at this quarterback in this, I'm making a trade. Mm-hmm. I would love for the Giants to trade Eli Manning to Jacksonville. I would be thrilled.
It would be great money ball strategy, which I would agree with in this case because he is up there in age.
Right.
You just have to make sure you truly believe in the guy you're about to draft. They can keep Bortles, but you can best believe.
You can't do it with Bortles. You can't bring Bortles in.
Why would I want to bring interceptions to?
I don't even know who the backup quarterback for the Giants is.
That's a scary.
Nassib. Ryan.
No, they
cut Nassib.
Yes.
Oh
Giants
wow.
Backup quarterback.
So maybe it's Josh Johnson.
It might have been Josh Johnson. He was who they had when Nassib was on IR last year, but I think they cut him too.
Wow. Giants just cut.
Giants may have just tipped their hand. Like, they probably go quarterback in round one.
It's Josh Jansen. It's Josh Johnson.
He's still on the roster?
Yep, Josh Johnson's still on the roster. You're right. You know what? The Giants are going to draft a quarterback.
They are going quarterback. And they're going to have Eli for those 2 years.
I don't understand. Why in the hell are they running Eli Manning out of town?
Here's the problem with, I mean, we're broadcasting New York City. I understand that this is a national radio show. But the problem with New York market is by week 3, there will be headlines, bench Eli.
Right, exactly.
Play Watson. And there will be, and every New York radio station, there's 2 sports radio stations here. Every radio station will, you won't hear about the Jets. You won't hear about the Yankees. You won't hear about the Mets. That will be the topic of conversation.
Bench Eli.
And it's going to be about a guy that won 2 Super Bowls against perhaps the best team
ever
in the New England Patriots. And people are going to want him on the bench. It's crazy.
It's crazy, right?
You know why?
That will happen.
I want to see Eli gone because I don't want to have to deal with that. You feel what I'm saying? What's up with Ben McAdoo? What does he have against Eli Manning? It baffles me. Or does he want his guy?
Probably want his guy, but also probably is not a big fan of the interceptions. I'll toss out another scenario. Would you bring in a veteran that has playoff and Super Bowl experience into the fold? Because there's a free agent out there that has that.
Who is that?
Colin Kaepernick. Have him be your number 2.
Oh boy, Colin Kaepernick is tough.
And that way you give Eli 2-3 years, and then you have this guy 2-3 years as a veteran in your system, has game experience.
So the thing
Nassib, right, as a matter of, right quickly, my buddy Jake Seeley fills me in on this. Ryan Nassib is an unrestricted free agent. He's not cut.
Wow. But they won't sign him back, I don't believe.
Yeah.
He was terrible in the preseason.
The thing about Colin Kaepernick is that same New York media
that
wants Eli benched will hammer Colin Kaepernick.
They're going to come for Colin Kaepernick. Does Colin Kaepernick have anything left, though, as far as a quarterback?
15 touchdowns, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions last year.
He's playing from behind.
With nobody at receiver.
Literally Curly. Still,
he's playing from behind. He's playing.
They were in some games. They went, week 9 with him? And so they were, I think, competitive enough to where they were in games toward the end. I think Chip Kelly got let go too quick, and I think Kaepernick finally got healthy, and he's going to get stronger again and build back up his body. He was out there with the 11th grade body last year.
I saw that.
You know, so we'll see.
He's a thin guy anyway. I met him at the Super Bowl a couple years ago. He was a slim kid, you know what I mean? But Colin Kaepernick, I don't know.
He played well last year, quite honestly, considering the resources that they had. It's just, I don't know where... I don't think he can come to New York, like you said, you know.
I think he needs to make a decision, and maybe he's starting to make that now. Are you going to be all in on football, or are you going to be all in on your political beliefs, which is fine, or, you know, you want to stand up for what's right, you want to social justice. If you're going to be all in on that, then go all in on that. Maybe retire from football. Use your celebrity in that manner. But if you are going to be an NFL quarterback, you want to get paid like an NFL quarterback, you have to be all in on this. You have to be all in on being in the film room when it's not required. Being at practice after practice ends. Run, you know, be the face of the franchise by being all in. And that's what you get with a guy like Tom Brady. And, you know, that's why he's the best.
And that's the problem, because you, if you're Kaepernick, you probably have a better fighting chance against changing social, you know, justice than conforming, changing the minds of these conservative owners.
Yeah.
Because they're worrying about how this will look on. So, you know, you really have to, like what he did, what recently said, like he's going to stand for the national anthem. That's saying, hey, okay, I'll play along just to get this opportunity.
That's a step,
That's a step.
And, you know,
because you're not going to win that battle against these NFL owners. They'll lock you out quickly. You know, you'll go up to Canada before you get another chance in the NFL.
Right. But there was a time when we were talking about Colin Kaepernick, like he's going to be a top 5 quarterback.
Remember
in the NFL.
What was that? Jaws was like he's going to be the best quarterback to ever play.
Yeah,
he probably would have been if
Harbaugh stayed and
with the owner and the GM and the coach, man. Like they broke up a great thing.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing out there in San Francisco.
Eagles,
first and foremost, yeah, exactly. That's it, 100%. And now they bring in now that job belongs to one Kyle Shanahan right now. When you continue to look at these quarterbacks, fellas, obviously every week it seems like it's a different flavor of the month with the quarterback position. When you look at the top guy, the big three at the top of this board with Trubisky, Kaiser, and Watson, do you like output? What's the two gentlemen? Glennon and Garoppolo in the mix with those rookie quarterbacks?
I think Garoppolo's
head and shoulders.
I think he can be the answer for somebody.
Okay.
Like, I think he can step right in, put him on the Texans, put him on a team that has been in the playoffs or is on the brink of being in the playoffs, put him in, and he can get you there. I don't think Glennon's that guy, and I think it'll be really tough for a quarterback to be that guy this year.
Yeah, you could put Garoppolo in Los Angeles.
That's a great fit, too.
A great fit for him. You could put him in.
Cause Rams or Chargers?
Rams. That's true. Rams. Forgot the Chargers move. But the Rams will be a great spot for him. I don't think the Rams are as bad as people are making them out to be. They got a lot of talent.
Especially on defense.
Exactly. And I think he would be great there. Depending on, even though I like Cardale Jones, you know, Buffalo could be a spot, but because I don't think that team is bad, although I do think Cardale Jones can take over and lead that team to wherever they want to go.
But Tyrod Taylor can do that too, though.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I don't understand that either. If you talk about fits, I mean, I think to me, Trubisky is more along. Would you take Kirk Cousins fourth overall? So I think, again,
I think. You're talking about a system quarterback and Cousins.
But I think Cousins isn't great. I don't think he's terrible. I think he's solid, you know. And
isn't he? If he's in the right system.
He's Alex Smith, and I think that's what Trubisky is. And I think you can win with Trubisky, but is his value worth fourth overall? You know, I don't think so. You know, if you like him, and I'm all about if you like a guy, forget everybody else, take him wherever you want to take him. But if it were me, I would wait to take a guy like Trubisky because I would think I can find 15 Trubiskys in the draft. You see what I'm saying?
No doubt about that, Bill.
So I have a list of quarterback or teams that need quarterback right away. Mm-hmm. The Browns, the 49ers, the Bears, Texans, Jets, Cardinals, Bills. All right, so let's say Garoppolo goes to the Browns. Are they winning 8 games this year?
AFC North, you still got Pittsburgh and Baltimore as the big dogs in that division. I think they get the 6 wins this year.
Okay. What about the Niners? Can they make some noise with Garoppolo?
I think if they draft right, they can get to 7 wins with Garoppolo.
What do they have? They don't have nothing around
literally
him.
Literally nothing.
Besides Carlos Hyde.
Literally nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
I put the Cardinals on this list only because I think Carson Palmer's on the, you know, the last.
But that's a good spot though, because they'll spread the field. He'll be in the shotgun. That's a good spot. He could hit the ground running in Arizona.
I didn't put the Rams on this list because they have Jared Goff.
Right,
but maybe they make a trade. Do you think someone would take Goff?
Nah. Who has the biggest ego as far as? Let's say offensive coordinators are concerned. Who has that biggest ego to where I can fix this guy? Who's that guy out there that feels as though
he's out of a job? Chip Kelly. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I was about to say, where's Mike McCoy at? You know what I'm saying? He's in Denver.
Denver.
Yeah.
Denver can use a quarterback.
Denver
can use a quarterback.
Garoppolo could go out there and would be. That's another good spot.
Another good fit
I think
there.
It's going to happen.
New England is not going to let Denver get a hold of Garoppolo.
That's true.
You feel what I'm saying?
Saints could use Garoppolo, honestly. I think Breeze is 2 years in, and Breeze throws a lot of game-changing interceptions on the low.
I think it's going to all come down to where Tony Romo goes, what happens with Kirk Cousins.
Is that the first piece to drop, the Romo piece?
I think Cousins is.
You think Cousins?
I think Cousins would.
Signs back with the Redskins. Mm-hmm. Then, okay, well, we didn't get Cousins, so let's figure out if we can get Tony Romo. We can't get Tony Romo. Okay, let's figure out how much Mike Glennon's going to really require. Right. And then say,
is this $15 million? Like, is this real money?
Is this real money? And then maybe they say, okay, going into the draft, we didn't get Romo, we didn't get Cousins, we passed on Mike Glennon. Let's go draft QBX.
Right.
All right, when we return on the other side, we're going to wrap it up, put a bow on this program. We thank everybody for joining us these past 4 days of our coverage of the 2017 NFL Combine. We didn't get to talk much defense, but we'll touch on some of the top defensive players on the board when we return right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Final segment of the program, final segment of our 2017 NFL Combine coverage right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be taking you all the way up, continuing to talk football, fantasy football, all the way up to the NFL draft and throughout the 2017 season. Want to give a special shout out to my guys, Bill Enright and Emery Hunt, for joining me along the way. Of course, also a shout out to Mike Blewett. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello. Also, great job done by the whole crew breaking down and getting you ready and introducing you to the fantasy football stars of the future right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And fellas, one thing that we do have, I think we got it in fantasy this year too. We got, well, in fantasy this year, we're going to have a consensus top three with Bell, Johnson, and Zeke. But in the NFL, we got a consensus number one. I have not seen a mock draft. I haven't seen anything that says that Myles Garrett-E is not the top pick in this draft. But you have some questions about that.
Yeah, because I just, again, I'm all in on guys that are athletic freaks if they're productive football players. And I know he had 31 sacks in 3 years at Texas A&M, but when you really break down those numbers, you know, UT San Antonio, Rice, where was he in the big game? It's a game-changing plays. Juxtaposed to a guy that played in the same conference in Derek Barnett. It seemed like every time Tennessee needed a big play, he stepped up and got that sack. I think he single-handedly turned around that Florida game because they were getting thrashed by Florida. And then here comes Barnett, I think, in back-to-back plays, sack. They punt the ball. Tennessee goes down and scores. So Barnett may not be the athletic freak that Garrett is, but Garrett is not the football player Barnett is. And I think it's funny because I think both guys played in the same high school all-star game or high school, I believe, where, you know, yes, you're getting by on athleticism and it helps because you're getting there and disrupting the play, but sometimes you have to pay off. And I just think Garrett, to me, is still a good player, but I don't think he's Julius Peppers like everyone is saying.
Julius Peppers is a good player, bro.
I've single-handedly watched Julius Peppers at North Carolina. One play, just say, you know what, I'm not lining up at DN. I'm going to go back at free safety, and ended up picking off the ball. Because if you're the quarterback, there's no way in hell this dude wearing number 49 that's a D lineman is going to make this play on the ball. He got over on the other side of the field, picked the ball off, and got like 30 yards. Crazy. That's Julius Peppers. That's
Julius
not Miles Garrett.
He's a hell of a player, bro. You remember how we talked about in the break, we were talking about Romo and Dez 2014 and Dez Bryant, the catch. You know why the Cowboys lost that game? Julius Peppers stripped DeMarco Murray on a play that would have been a touchdown. It would have been 28-10 going into the fourth quarter if Julius Peppers doesn't make that play. So Julius Peppers, and I just heard that he's coming back for his 16th NFL season. I remember Julius Peppers when he was dunking on cats, you know what I'm saying, playing for the North Carolina Tar Heels basketball team. So
the Panthers used to line him up at receiver and throw him fades. Green Bay threw him a slant in the Superdome, and he caught it. Like, that's the disrespect, but the athleticism
is there.
Malik Hooker is Malik Hooker is the guy people are saying is probably more than likely the second best defensive player in this draft right here between him and Jonathan Allen, Bill. Hooker. And you're like, I never seen him.
Who is that?
Malik Hooker. He's a safety out of Ohio State.
Yes.
Safety, you don't play IDP, huh?
Nah.
Hey, what'd you think about?
I could have sworn he meant to direct that question to Emery. And then he said Bill at the end. And I was like, oh.
I was waiting for you to speak. And I was like, is he listening?
He thinks I'm going to talk about defensive guys right now.
Nah, I feel you, Bill. I feel you on that 100%.
I like Hooker, man. There are people out there has called him Ed Reed. He's not Ed Reed because Ed Reed actually can fly up and be a factor in run defense.
Yeah, you don't have when you're in your chest with that Reed guy in his chest. You know what I'm saying?
People see it as a knock, but I don't see it as a knock because you got to look at Jarius Bird when he was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous sideline to sideline ball hawk with range. And I think that's what Hooker is.
What about this kid, Jonathan Allen, from the defensive end in Alabama?
I like Allen. I think Allen's a better. People say he should be an edge rusher or a defensive end. I think you want that quickness and that strength on the inside as a three tech, and I think right there, put him over those guards, let him whip those guards constantly. He'll get in the backfield.
What about this guy Tez Tabor?
Jalen Tabor, yeah, good corner. They're gonna knock him because he just ran a 4.63. He's probably as polished as any cornerback in his draft class. From backpedal, breaking on the ball, got ball skills, good zone skills, and good man-to-man skills.
Hey, what happened with the kid, the linebacker from Alabama, Reuben Foster, over the weekend with the situation where he got sent home and stuff like that?
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
From what I heard driving in, I was listening to another radio show.
Why the hell would you do that?
Because I was high.
Okay.
And what happened was they were going back and forth. He had been waiting there for 2 hours. And apparently, you know, from the reports that – the guy was also, you know, egging this on. And one of the NFL people.
Who, Foster?
No, the
NFL nurse,
right. So they was going, yeah, so they were going back and forth. And they said when they broke it up, one NFL guy was like, you know, yeah, just let him say, you know. But Troy Vincent came in and was like, you know, with that hard line stance of discipline, like, no, he has to go. He has to understand, like, so they wanted him. They weren't going to let this become a big deal.
And it happened that way.
But it happened that way.
That's just a shame.
You know, because, again.
Yeah, Troy Vincent's a fraud, too.
Well, because he wants to, you know.
Yeah, Troy Vincent's a fraud. I've got so many stories about Troy Vincent. I'm telling you, that'll blow your mind about Troy Vincent. So that's neither here nor there, though. But then once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us, everybody for listening. Of course, thanks for my man Bill Enright, Fantasy Football Champs, Emory Hunt, Football Game Plan, Joe Lisi, GoForTheTwo.com, Rich Sermonello, Campus Insiders. Thank you for rocking with us over the past couple days as we introduce you to the Fantasy Football Stars of tomorrow.